Today we begin a new month, a new theme. And the theme for this month has to do with patience. It's the second in a series of seven themes that will carry us more or less to the end of the year. Seven themes that have to do with mindfulness and heartfulness, that have to do with our practice and improving, perfecting, deepening our practice and our lives, which are not two different things, except that hopefully we have time of focused practice each day, time for zikr, contemplation. And so the way this was expressed is, patience is consent to the present moment. Patience is crowned with faith. The second sentence will become clearer when we read a selection from the Mesnevi. So we're in time. You know, we live in time, and how often do we really recognize that? How often are we in motion, not in time, trying to get from one place to another, from one thing to another, from one moment to another, as if escaping this moment and getting to some other moment was an end in itself? He calls to mind the unforgettable hadith, which goes something like, live for the things of this world as if you had eternity in front of you. Anybody heard this hadith? And live for the infinite, the akhira, I don't want to say the other world, but the afterlife, which is also the eternal life, as if you would die tomorrow. So the Prophet also said, haste is of the devil. That's a bit strong, but maybe it's a little devil. I was amused by myself today. I was in a car, and I knew I was going to be entering Bardstown Road at an intersection that was difficult, and I was trying to remember, why don't I use this intersection more often? I've been avoiding it for a long time, but I thought, let's just go for it today. And so we went there. There's a line of cars, and the light would change, and all these other cars were coming from every which direction, and there was enough time for one car in my lane to get through that light before it changed and you had to wait for the next change of light. And then another car would go, and then you would wait. And of course, at first my reaction was, oh, geez, impatience. I think if we start to look at ourselves, we're going to see a lot of things like this. We have a dear friend. She's a very saintly woman, and whenever she's stuck in California traffic, in Southern California traffic, she rejoices. She says, you know, she's in a total traffic jam. It's not moving. And she says, oh, wonderful. It's time to bless the car in front of me, the car in back of me, the car to my right, the car to my left.
That's why it's become like her. This traffic is like, oh my God.
So, you know, this theme is about how we are in the moment. And when we're in contemplation, when we're deepening in zikr or in muraqabah, patience is a factor. The lack of patience is a disturbance. lack of patience is a loss of mindfulness, heartfulness. So patience is consent to the present moment, to time. And it's extraordinary to wake up and realize we're in time. In something called time. But when we're conscious of it, suddenly the relationship changes. We're unconscious. We're waiting. Oh, when will Kabir finish this meditation? Or whatever. I also recommend that if you have the interest, you might do a search in the Quran or any other sacred text that appeals to you and see what's said about patience. There are a couple of ways to do this with the Quran. I mean, I have some tools here. I have a concordance upstairs. I can just look it up and find every ayat that has sabr in it. But I'm sure you can do this on the internet. Some translations also of the Quran also have an index. You can certainly search online, search the Quran in just in English. And the concordance I have, which is kind of expensive, it's like University of California. It was $100 20 years ago, so I don't know what it is now, but you can look up every word by its roots. So sabr would be S-B-R, and see all the variations of the form and all the occurrences. It's interesting to just... There are apps that do it, yeah. Which app would be recommended?
I have two on my phone.
The Quran, I mean...
Quran study, and then the other one, I forget what it's called.
Yeah. So a reason for suggesting this is that, you know, we take this book pretty seriously, you know, as a reference point. Well, just see, well, what does it say? Does it say anything interesting about patience? In fact, it does. Patience is a big theme. And it says often, to the patient, give glad tidings. It's almost as if the two most fundamental virtues in this revelation are patience and gratitude. Those two things. If you've got those two, everything so much follows from that. And patience also has the meaning in Arabic of endurance. So it's not just passivity. It's also the capacity to endure. I remember in the teachings of Gurdjieff, when he spoke about levels of being, and in Gurdjieff's system, your level of being is your level of spiritual attainment. It's what you are. I mean, literally, your being is what you are. And being was defined as what you can bear. Bear in the sense of bear, endure, suffer, not in the really negative sense of the word, but, you know, carry on, endure. He spoke about bearing the negative manifestations of others without being reactive, for instance. So that ability to be in an unbroken, sustained way is a measure of our spiritual attainment, a measure of our being. Sabr is an aspect of that, to be practiced at the beginning of the path, especially at the beginning of the path, especially at the end of the path, because it's the last of the 99 names in the conventional, in the Hadith listing of 99 names, sabr comes last. There's also a verse in the Quran that says, ask God's help in patience and prayer. In patience and prayer. And this kind of hits the mark as far as what I intended by this theme, because prayer meant to include every mode of communing with the divine. From the ritual prayer to zikr to muraqabah, which is watchfulness.
Could you explain more about what muraqabah is?
Well, raqib, the word raqib means to be watchful. Raqib is he. Allah is the raqib, the most watchful of the watchful. So it is a Sufi word for meditation. By meditation is watchfulness. It's what we do here at the beginning of every Thursday night. It's muraqabah.
So mindfulness, so to speak.
It's like mindfulness, but it's
like vigilance.
Well, these are all synonyms that could be used, but vigilance is often can also mean outer vigilance. Muraqabah is attending to your own inner processes, so that when you inside yourself move back to that part of yourself which is just witnessing. Witnessing is probably a very good synonym for this, for what it is functionally. Witnessing the processes of your mind, not getting caught up in them. But muraqabah, even more, and it has levels, because even more beautiful level is muraqabah of the heart. If you can quiet the mind and emotions, I mean, let them, relatively speaking, subside. Almost no one is completely without thought or emotions that come and go. But when you let the emotions become quieter and the thinking mind become more still, then you can begin to be watchful of the heart. And that's a beautiful thing, because it means, for one thing, you're getting in touch with your heart. Heart has a lot to say. It's a source of perception. It's a source of knowing. And you don't make the mistake of trying to think, oh, what is the heart? Asking too many questions about it. Just be with the heart. Just let your attention sink. I say sink into the heart, not that it has a physical location, literally. But at least we get out of our heads and we begin to recall, yes, I have a heart. What is the state of my heart? The state of your heart could be any number of disturbances, or it could be hopefully something beautiful, some yearning, this brings me to an important, very important subject. I think the most powerful practice of Sufism, of the Sufi, is to keep one's heart on your beloved. Now, the beloved could be both Allah, and it can be the Prophet, and it can also be Mevlana. These are not necessarily different things. It can be any prophet whose example inspires you. But in our tradition, and I'm speaking now from what I've seen, witnessed, experienced among the people who have matured on the Mevlevi path, these people are very, very, very attuned to the beauty of Mevlana. For them, Mevlana represents something really beautiful, really noble. I mean, so does Shams and the Prophet and Muhammad and Jesus and many other prophets. Oh, many other prophets are loved. When you're with Sufis, they're always talking about the prophets. This is the landscape they live in. This is what they're inspired by. They're living in a universe where the prophets are more real than any movie stars or celebrities or politicians. They don't care about that stuff. That's worldly stuff. It really is a waste of time. But to have a Mevlana, which means our master, someone who embodies, as he does, without doubt, extraordinary qualities, mostly of love, and of, I mean, Mevlana loved everybody. He loved people regardless of race, religion, etc., etc. He just had that love, and he taught that love. And simultaneous with that is the awareness of your love of God. But even that love of God is, here we have to qualify it a little bit and say, again, speaking from experience, not from theory, not from books, the great Sufis we have known have been people we loved. And the most beautiful worship we've seen has been the love of dervishes for each other, as you see in the bowing of the Sema so many times. Dervishes bow to each other, and they look really at the point between the eyebrows. They're seeing into the infinite. They're seeing the face of God in each other. And that dignity, that respect, that affection and love is the embodiment of love for God. It's not something separate from love of God. Someone wrote to me recently and said, and he was struggling with whether he should get into a romance or not. And he said, I just don't think it's right to love anyone but Allah. Or to give my love or give my heart to anyone but Allah. And I thought, well, how will I respond to this person so as not to get into mind games, which I think in a way, when somebody who says that, it's evidence of a noble aspiration, but it's missing something really important. So I wrote to this person and I said, love of God is overcoming separation. It's not an excuse to become more separate. So if you can overcome your separation with other human beings, if you can find one person to love, you know what I should have told them, and I didn't think of it, because this is also true on the path. You come to a sheikh and you say, and this is, you say, I want to go on the path. And the sheikh says, have you ever loved anyone? If you haven't, he'll say, you're not ready yet for this path. Go and find someone to love and come back. They say this literally. So it's in the human being that the divine qualities are embodied. It's in the human being that we find the divine reflection in Sufism. Others may play their various games of winning God's approval by performing what they think will win God's approval. But on the Sufi path, among other things, can you love? And at the same time, and along with that, can you be patient? Again, in the Mevlevi Sema, as an example, that's a ceremony. It is kind of slow. When people first see it in the American context, some people get antsy. Typically, from my experience, 1 or 2% of the people in the audience will literally walk out in the first 15 minutes. Sometimes more. Because they expected whirling dervishes, boom, 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 chop, chop, chop. Let's see them spin. And here they are, walking very slowly around the sacred space, pausing halfway in their steps. And bowing. Like this. Patience is built into it. Then the whirling begins. But even the whirling stops at certain points. So I come back briefly and just underline this idea that and make a connection. The best thing for our practice is to remember Mevlana or whatever exemplar you choose. If you could remember God, that would be fine too, but God is a bit abstract. Once early on, we met a Sufi sheikh. We sat down at his table in the first minute of meeting him. In his humble kitchen around a round table, and he hit his fist on the table and he said, "We do not love an abstract God." It's what's embodied in humanness. And that's frankly, that's how we learn to love. I had no idea who could love God, really. I mean, some rare people can, or think they do. But I think our love of God has developed over time from the love we received and exchanged and eventually learned a little bit to give, and the gratitude for that whole setup in which we could experience this love and find that there was a community, a path, a practice in which that love could grow. By always referring to the exemplar, to the beloved Mevlana, to the beloved Prophet Muhammad, to the beloved Jesus. And along with that, yes, more and more Allah becomes real. These are just clearly reflections of that, and clearly Mevlana is what he is because he is a pure reflection. But this does more to bring about some freedom from the nafs than anything else. Love is the greatest transformer. And likewise, when the point I'm getting around to is that even patience depends on love. Patience can't just be a mental phenomenon. Maybe 10% of it can. But the rest of it comes, real patience, real endurance, comes from your trust in the divine, your perception that the divine is here in this moment, essential to this moment, that there's nowhere else to be, nowhere else to get to. And the Quran says, ask God's help in patience and prayer. And another ayat that says, yes, oh, there's a little more to it. Seek help in patience and prayer. And this is a hard thing for all but the humble in spirit, or ista'inu bi sabri wa sala, or inaha la kabiratun illa ala al khashi hashihina. A hard thing for all but the humble in spirit. And another hadith, and that's ayat 245, a hadith, how remarkable the faithful one's affairs are, the mutmin's affairs. How remarkable are the affairs of the mutmin? And such a condition is only for the faithful. If something good happens, she thanks God, and this is to her benefit. And if something bad happens, she endures it, and that is to her advantage. This is the state of the mutmin. I'll pass these around. And let's look at the poem, Patience is Crowned with Faith. And Anna, would you read that to us?
Patience is crowned with faith. If you are running away in hope of some relief, in that direction, too, a calamity comes to meet you. No corner is without wild beasts. There is no rest but in the place where you are alone with God. Even the narrow cell of this world's inevitable prison is not exempt from the charges for visitors and the cost of a housewarming. By God, if you flee into a mouse hole, you will be afflicted by someone who has the claws of a cat. People thrive on fantasy, if their fantasies are beautiful. But if their fancies show anything unlovely, they melt away like wax in front of a fire. If amid snakes and scorpions, God keeps you with the imaginings of those who are spiritually fair, the snakes and scorpions will be friendly to you, because that imagination is the elixir that transmutes your copper into gold. Patience is sweetened by this kind of imagination, since in this case, the imaginings of relief come to mind. Such relief enters the heart from faithfulness. Weakness of faith is despair and torment. Patience is crowned with faith. Where one has no patience, one has no faith. The prophet said, God hasn't given faith to anyone in whose nature there is no patience.
Share some perceptions, some reflections on this.
The last two lines are just wow. I mean, just thinking about it, it's like I said, I didn't realize. I mean, I've always known that patience is important, but you know, reading God hasn't given faith to anyone whose nature there is no patience is like overwhelming, because it's like, oh my goodness, that's such a big deal. But you don't even, you know, sometimes you just do things unmindfully and it's like there's no patience, you just sort of but it's so important. Mm.
Yes, beautiful. It's self-evident once it's pointed out, isn't it?
In reading the Quran, it's very specific about patience in the face of adversity. And I don't know whether it's in there 50 times or 100 times or 200 times, but it is just in there over and over and over as a constant theme. And it just, and I read something either this morning or yesterday about, I don't think it was outright deniers, it was the hypocrites who were in between, running as if they were running away from a lion. They'd run away from God. And if you have patience, adversity, like the traffic jam, is such an opportunity. And yet we're reared to run away from the lion.
Personally, just thinking about all the things I've done, you know, not being patient, not necessarily bad, but sort of just pointless, you know, just doing things to overcome boredom or like, you know, just not to be in the present moment. And then it's like, I can see why, because it's so pointless that there's no point to do any of those things if you just sit and, like, you know, be okay with the present moment, then, you know, that is patient.
The whole state of being, literally who we are, our quality and level of being changes if we accept this. Mm-hmm. Accept being in time, being in this moment, being where we are.
It seems like we're raised with such a need to know or change it or for it to control it. Or we want to dominate here. I don't know. It's very strange. Yeah. Power raise and, you know, all of that. Everybody's different. But it's a part of all of us. It's part of the culture. It's built in.
What else do you see here?
I'm wondering about the difference between faith and knowing. Because as you read and then Anna read, up until the last two lines, I was thinking about those who are sick. Pure in faith, that when I am aware of existence and presence of God, then it's easy for me to feel patient and it's easy for me to feel gratitude. And when lost that awareness, then the opposite is true. Sometimes the knowing, the experience of God's presence, there's a secular expression, fake it till you make it. I need faith to act as though I know. Before I have the knowing, I'm saying to the universe, okay, I'm going to suspend disbelief and presume that you're there. And that's the faith that I have when I don't know, but it opens me to knowing.
Yes, which is real faith. So there ought to be two different words for the first thing you describe.
Are there in the Quran? Are there in?
Well, it comes back to the Ilmal Yakin, Ain al Yakin, Hakal Yakin. You can speak about that.
Yeah. There aren't, even in Arabic, two distinct words for this, but faith. Properly speaking, the full realization of faith is not sort of blindly and hopefully doing something in the hope that it'll turn out better. maybe that's, you know, if that's where we are, let's go for it. Let's do that. But the real attainment of faith becomes a state in which there really is no question anymore. And it's really good that you brought up knowing, because I can now refer to the arif in Arabic, the arif, the arifin, the knowers. This is like a distinct class of people, the arifin. The Sufis are on the way to becoming the arifin, the knowers, the Gnostics. It's close to the general term of the Gnostic. The Gnostic has a lot of other baggage, historical baggage. But if you take the pure meaning of the Gnostic, the knower of God, only the knower of God can really be faithful, truly faithful, only through that knowing. So what Camille was referring to is that there are three stages of knowing, and yakin is a word that means nearness and certainty at the same time. So you have the certainty of knowledge, which means I've read about it in a book. I've read that there's such a thing as a mutmeen. And now I've heard about it. I didn't used to know about it. Now I know about it. Ilmal yakin, the knowledge of certainty. Ain al yakin, the eye of certainty, meaning I've seen it, I've experienced it. And then, which means I've lived it to some extent. I've lived that certainty. And the final stage is hak al yakin, the reality, the truth, the certainty, which is deeper still. So, yeah, there are those levels of experience. And in the Western traditions, faith means something you do because, you know, you just kind of hope there's a God, hope that you're hoping there's a God that's going to be good for you. You know, it's all kind of very, it's a very tentative state. You're doing your best, but, and even, I must say, I was raised, even the Jesuits taught me that faith was a leap of faith. But that's not how it's presented in the Quran. In the Quran, the reminder is constantly, there are signs for hearts that reflect. Wake up. Notice. Pay attention. And your heart will know. The heart will begin to know the reality of these signs, the haq of these signs, until you really know haq, until it is deep in your being to know that we live in a spiritual reality. And that's when one can be truly mu'min, truly faithful. You're not just taking, faith is not taking a risk, taking a leap. It's not wishful thinking. It's, thank God, it's the realization of the way things are.
Question about that. Is that like a permanent state, like, you know, faith, because, you know, when something bad happens, you have like that little inch of doubt.
Sort essentially,
of like
yes.
Cook, you know, where he like, so is it permanent, or do you like come in and out of that state.
Well, you know, our faith can be, we're all human beings, and any of us can experience moments of doubt and worry, things like this. And I wouldn't even say that worry negates faith. You know, on one level we worry. There's lots to worry about. But maybe faith is something deeper than that. Despite my worries, I have faith. Not that things are going to turn out the way I want them to turn out, but that this is meaningful, purposeful. That there is, the bottom line is that this is a merciful reality. The bottom line is the divine mercy, nurturing, sustenance. It doesn't mean that difficult things won't happen. It's the hadith reminds us. That's where the faith is. It's that there's nothing arbitrary, there's nothing meaningless in this reality. That kind of faith deepens over time. It deepens with experience. It becomes easier for some than for others. There may be reasons for that, you know, in your own psychological history and so forth. But the proposal here is that it is possible for anyone to come to that, to the reality of that faith, as an artist, as a knower. Imam Ali said, "Irfan is my stock in trade." What a beautiful saying. It was a part of a very long hadith. He said, this knowingness, that's my business. I'm in the business of knowingness. What a business to be in. How beautiful. That's why people are in love with Ali. As much as Muhammad. I mean, there's no putting limits on this. It's not like, if I love Mevlana, I'm going to love Ali less. Not at all. And that isn't that in here too? Did you get that? Did you see where that is in here? It says, where does it say it? It says, God keeps you with the imaginings of those who are spiritually fair. If amid snakes and scorpions, God keeps you with the imaginings of those who are spiritually fair, the snakes and scorpions will be friendly to you. Because that imagination is the elixir that transmutes your copper into gold. So this is telling us, the first several stanzas there are telling us, no, you can't escape. You run down the mouse hole, the claws are going to get you. It doesn't say everything's going to turn out the way you want it to, but it does say if you run from this, it may not turn out very well. But if you keep, even amid snakes and scorpions, if God keeps you with the imaginings, and now I might want to find a better word for imaginings. It's really the vision. Imagining is okay. Of those who are spiritually fair, the prophets, the great saints, the great lovers of God. You know, if those are our continual companions in our life, the quality of life changes extraordinarily. After Salat, we'll come back and I'm going to play you some music that will show what I'm talking about. Some beautiful, actually, Alevi music from southeastern Turkey. And I was listening to this after dinner with Camille and we're just astounded at how beautiful it is. And I realized that this is an example. The beauty of it is that these people, who and what they're singing about, the joy it brings, the transcendence and the beauty that's in people's lives, because this is what they choose to sing about. They sing about Ali, they sing about Muhammad, they sing about imams and so forth, with such love and devotion. They live lives of devotion. It's very different from the most popular rock and roll song of all time. Who knows what the most popular, what was voted the most popular rock and roll song of all time? The greatest rock and roll song of all time.
Greatest.
Greatest rock and roll song. You know it? Okay, be quiet for a
minute.
I wonder if we both read the same poll or survey. The one I read was in Rolling Stone, which is the Bible.
And it's the key to the
Is it? Yeah. I can't get no satisfaction.
Yes.
That's it. Good.
And on a more slightly more positive note, the biggest rock and roll stars of all time, actually in terms of concerts and drawing crowds, was U2. I still haven't found what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Their biggest song.
Yeah.
Which is a bit nobler, actually, than I Can't Get No Satisfaction.
I had a job very briefly after college and as the editor of the personals section. I don't know if I ever told you this.
No, you never told me.
Okay.
This fascinating bit of personal history.
And this was pre-internet. It was still paper ads. But it had the beginnings of some data analysis, and you could see how many people had called which ad. And because this was, you know, pre-internet days, women, it was really skewed in terms of there were a lot of men seeking women, very few women seeking men. And so my boss used to tell me, "Could you write some ads?" You know? And so I got very good at writing all these ads. Yeah. And everyone says, "I always knew they were not real." But I don't know. This is just what But anyway, so I experimented with ads. And the number one, again, like off the charts ad that I wrote, the headline was just frustrated. You know, I can't find what I'm, you know, I go to places to try to meet people. You know, I don't meet people I want to meet in bars. You know, my friends don't help, whatever. It was basically almost like the song. And it was, I mean, it was the most number of calls in the entire database.
It reaches people where they are.
Yeah. Unscientific.
Well, Mevlana says everybody's searching for only one thing. But they... they think of a lot of other things to call it, but really they're searching for one. There's only one thing that's going to satisfy the human heart.
Ya Ali.